keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd. No, we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV and the antimedia.org/radio. I'm really happy to be back. I'm alive and well. I'm not at the RNC. We do have some people out there, though, and that may get a little interesting. Today seemed to start out as a little bit of a dud, it seemed. Not too many protesters, and 17 people showed up to the Women for Trump rally and stuff. Very, very overblown threat, maybe. I guess it's the first day, so I heard a lot of people were stuck in bad weather, and they're trying to get down to Cleveland and all that stuff. So I don't know, I guess we're gonna have to keep an eye on that. We'll be having some updates on the RNC on Wednesday, because there's sure to be some other happenings going on. There is some stuff, some newsworthy things that went on today, so we'll talk about that. And then make sure you catch us 5 days a week here on UCY.TV or theantimedia.org/radio. And if you miss us, you can catch us on YouTube, UCY TV YouTube channel, very easy to find, and you can listen to us anytime, anywhere. Unless you're in Turkey, where they're still intermittently shutting down social media, so keep an eye on that as well. That being said, our co-host, DB Schwartz, is having a little bit of a technical issue. He's going to be calling in a few minutes, but we are joined right now by one of our awesome journalists, Jake Anderson. What's up, Jake?
Not much. not watching the convention. Just not interested in watching a celebration of the apocalypse tonight. But I'm sure I'll watch with awe at how they deal with Trump. I don't know. Have you watched any of it today, Nick?
Oh, man. I watched, like, I had it playing for like 5 minutes, but I think my brain cells were dying. So I was like, you know, trying to concentrate on work and stuff. And I couldn't do that because I was getting dumber like by the second.
Yeah,
so,
it's really very much like watching the Super Bowl or a sporting event. Like there's virtually no intellectual concepts going on. There's, if you're an intelligent person, that there is nothing being offered you except for a kind of meta satirical discourse on how shitty our country is. I mean, that's literally all you can get from it.
Well, you know, like our host from Tuesdays and Thursdays, S.M. Gibson, likes to always refer to this political arena as like professional wrestling. It's like watching the WWF. It really is, man, and a bunch of people shouting and cheering and blah, 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 blah. It's mind-numbing. I've been just paying attention to my social media feed, and A lot of my friends are following it. We got a couple people that are out there. Derek Bros is there at the DNC or at the, sorry, the RNC. You know, so I've been getting some updates from that, and so I'm trying to rely on people that are on the ground, that are on my friends list, to get some accurate reporting from the outside of the convention. And then, of course, you can watch the live video from C-SPAN on the inside, but, you know, it's just a bunch of hate-mongering, fear-mongering. They had, you know, they had some people in there just demonizing immigrants. I heard that they were going to have, like, someone who has been victimized by some type of immigrant is going to, like, give a speech. I don't know if that's already happened today or not, but it's going to happen sometime soon, if not. You know, they're just stirring up a bunch of fear and stuff, and that's, you know, that's become what the nature of politics is here in the United States. It's just, you know, they're selling you fear. I wonder if DB's been watching and staying updated on the RNC thing. DB, what's up, man? How you doing tonight?
Pretty good. Yeah, I've been checking it out. It's been, God, it's been comical. It's great.
It's kind of a good cop, bad cop, what goes on with these conventions, because you have the Republicans come in and they'll play the security car real hard, you know, with all these shootings going on. They're going to come down real hard on the side of security, protecting us from, you know, keeping our law enforcement strong, keeping our military strong. But it's really just, oh, it's just good cop, bad cop, because then when the Democrats come in, they'll sound like the more, like, reasoned, practical bunch, when really, you know, Hillary's going to be just as militaristic, both domestically and internationally, as Trump would be.
Yeah, it's kind of horrifying, man. And the David Clark, you know, the police chief from, I can't even remember where, but he gets it stirred up and gets it to where people are saying, you know, cops need more arms, more protection. They need to be in armored vehicles. Yes, we need cops in Humvees.
There you have it, man. I was watching. Well, one funny thing that happened today, apparently Alex Jones got trolled. So this is probably the first convention Alex Jones has been at where he's actually the bootlicker. Because, you know, normally he's like anti-government and, you know, conspiracy theory this, and the UN's going to take over the United States and whatever, whatever. The nonsense that he sells to his supporters with a side of iodine pills. I mean, you can't make this shit up, but I guess, you know, apparently you can. But it's kind of funny watching Alex Jones out there because, as everyone knows, he's become a complete jackboot for Trump, and he's like so in bed with Trump that it's not even funny. I mean, I can't tell where Trump's ass ends and Alex Jones' head begins. So Alex Jones is out there like holding a rally, like shilling for Trump, talking about how illegal immigrants and Muslims are so bad, and you know how he was actually promoting nationalism. He's like, this rise of nationalism, it's global and it's amazing and it's the new capitalism and stuff. And Alex Jones has majorly lost his way. I mean, he had some early works that were pretty good, and I'm not going to lie, I used to follow his very early work, and you know, he used to throw out some really crazy sounding theories and stuff, but whatever, he did have some good work. But now he's just gone so far to the right. He's now completely promoting nationalism, an anti-immigrant, Islamophobic kind of narrative. And I don't know, I guess it's selling this year because, you know, obviously with Trump and, you know, around the world, he's right. Nationalism is rising. Look at the thing that went on in England and the Brexit and all that stuff. I'm not saying the Brexit was a completely bad thing, but the way it was sold to the people, the way that it was successful, was very much in the same vein as Donald Trump is selling this anti-immigrant, xenophobic kind of narrative that is being sold. And, you know, Alex Jones is eating that shit up and repackaging it and selling it in an even more extreme way to his followers, where his followers are probably pretty angry and violent right now towards immigrants. And, you know, it is interesting to see Alex Jones out there licking Donald Trump's boots. But, you know, I don't know. It's just really weird. Really weird year 2016 has become.
Yeah. I used to read a little bit of Alex Jones stuff in the same way that I would read David Icke's, you know, just, you know, kind of familiarize myself with different conspiracy theories. And yeah, he's taken a really strange turn from, you know, identifying the kind of global synarchy that's controlling, the economy through the Federal Reserve and central banks and all that stuff that he's identified, and then suddenly going into this kind of new movement of anti-establishment nationalism and Islamophobia, it's really disturbing and unbelievable that he feels that immigrants are what is our threat right now. I mean, it's incredible to me. It's incredible. I cannot believe that anyone would believe immigrants are what are a danger to our country right now. Like, on the list of like 100 things that are destroying the world and the country, immigrants aren't even on the list.
Yeah, I mean, you're first of all, you're 57 times more likely to be killed by a cop than you are by a Islamic terrorist. And a lot of the people that are Islamic terrorists in the United States, they're not immigrants. They're not refugees. They were here. They were born here. They've been radicalized here because after 9/11, a bunch of Islamophobia sprang up. I mean, before 9/11, can you name one homegrown radical Islamic terrorist act that happened? I mean, maybe very rarely, but I can't name one. After 9/11 is when this stuff started happening, and it's when the American public was tricked into thinking Islam was the enemy or that Muslims were our enemy because...
The craziest part, Nick, is the attacks, the big ones like the USS Liberty, were by Israel. And the only real attack I can remember would be like Lockerbie.
Yeah. And that was... Wasn't that something to do with...
Gaddafi and
Scotland. Gaddafi, there you go. Gaddafi, yeah. That's what I was looking for.
I mean, but the thing is, man, like the whole thing with 9/11 and why it was so bunked was that it you have to be a complete idiot to direct attack us. Like, why would you ever use terrorism of a physical accounting against the U.S.? We'll just absorb it and come back at you. If 9/11 had really been what they intended, it would have been a crash to the economy. And if you research into it, you'll find out they did try to do that because they tried to blow up, I guess, one of the tunnels that had the fiber optic cables. But that's why 9/11 is just so many holes, man. You don't hit a giant in his chest. You hit him in the knees, right? So we know it was just a complete bogus act.
Yeah, I want to get into the 28 pages, too. One last point I had here, and again, so the only news that really came out today from inside of the RNC, and forgive me if I confuse the RNC for DNC, because to me they've kind of just become very similar, and I it's hard to distinguish between the Democrats and the Republicans at this point, because they both use very similar policies, even though they pretend like their rhetoric is like polar opposites. They both enact like the same exact policies. The evidence is clear with Obama, who was like the Bernie Sanders of 2008, who is running the country like Bush was at the end of his presidency. I mean, he just extended the war in Afghanistan. We're sending more troops into Iraq, like seems like every month. So, you know, Obama has not done anything. So I get the Republicans and Democrats confused. So forgive me if that happens. Some of the newsworthy stuff that came out today was the anybody but Trump crowd within the Republicans, you know, the Ted Cruz people and all that. They were shouted down today at the RNC. They tried to have like some kind of state by state vote, which was supposedly meant to embarrass Trump or whatever. Didn't matter. They were shouted down by Trump's loyalists within the convention. And he's got a bunch of jackboots in there that are going to, you know, they'll, I don't know what they're capable of, but they're capable of shouting down pretty prominent political figures and stuff like that. I mean, I was kind of happy to see these guys get shouted down. One of the guys, I'm trying to remember who this was now. I'm trying to, Mike something King. He's a senator out of Illinois. God, I'm going to have to go back and search this up because I didn't write it down. Anyway, one of these guys who is like one of the Never Trump people, afterwards, he went out and he was given an interview on MSNBC. And, you know, this is the guy that's trying to sell himself as like the moderate, like, you know, yeah, Trump's too crazy for the party. He went on MSNBC and he basically was saying that white Europeans have contributed to most of the planet and everyone else kind of hasn't done shit. And that if it weren't for America, the world would be in the Stone Age or whatever. This is basically what he was saying.
And that's a scary ideal that the military believes, man. That's the scariest thing about it.
It is, and it's very, you know, very much in the vein of American exceptionalism. And keep in mind, this is the guy that's like supposedly moderate. Like, he won't even support Trump because Trump is too crazy, supposedly. You know what I'm saying? So this is just okay. Here we go. Representative Steve King. I guess he's a congressman from Iowa. He basically referred to anyone else besides America and Western Europe as like subgroups who haven't committed, haven't contributed anything to to the world, and that America is basically God's gift to the earth and all that stuff. And it's a very sick, twisted kind of idea, but I understand it. I mean, this is the kind of rhetoric that is forced down our throats from day one, the moment you start going to school. American exceptionalism, and we're the freest place in the world, we're the richest country in the world, we're the best country in the world. And
China was writing things on paper when we were still in caves, dude.
Yeah, exactly. And let's not forget the Middle East. I mean, the ancient Persians and stuff were contributing to mathematics, and a bunch of cultures were very advanced when it comes to physics and the cosmos and everything. I mean, these guys are just so short-sighted, and they're looking just to give red meat to their fanatic followings that they just say stuff that doesn't make any sense at all. And this is coming from the moderate Republicans, not the Trump people. So that was newsworthy as well. There was just a bunch of random speakers. There's nobody of substance really in the Republican lineup. I mean,
about Ms. Trump though?
She may be smarter than the rest of these assholes. I mean, Giuliani was just spreading fear mongering and hate mongering and stuff.
Do you think they'll roll Clint Eastwood on out?
They should. You can talk to that chair again.
Someone told me, I think they tried to get Tom Brady, but, you know, they should have thrown Tom Brady up there with some deflated footballs.
That'd be funny. I heard they were trying to get Brady, but then he couldn't come on.
Does anyone know who the big, they always have like a, you know, VIP, like, you know, surprise. Is there any guesses on who? Not that I don't. Why do I even? Why am I? I don't care. Don't even answer it. I don't care.
The point, yeah. I wanted to bring up. Go ahead, DB. I'll bring this up right now.
I was just gonna say, man. I have no idea. We're gonna have some special guest speaker. So, from what I've been hearing, it's gonna be Caitlyn Jenner. But I don't know if she spoke tonight or not. I have no clue.
Oh, another one of our intellectual heroes. You know, forgive me if I'm wrong, but shouldn't these conventions have, like, philosophers and, like, profound thinkers and people that actually have ideas, you know, like, to, like, actually give some kind of information of substance for people to, like, watch and be like, oh, wow, that makes a lot of sense. It's something I could think about and something maybe we could actually, you know, maybe that philosophy should be incorporated in the way that we run our government. Maybe, you know, things would be better. Instead, it's just a bunch of hate and fear-mongering, dude. I mean, the politics in the United States have descended so far south that, I mean, I really don't see it as being salvageable. The only bright spots in this election so far, the two things that I've seen, is one that a lot of the Bernie people have moved over to Jill Stein, which I find very interesting, and I see a lot of people on my friends list. So far, it's anecdotal because there hasn't been any good polls because they don't include Jill Stein in the polling.
It's got to be like 90%. Like, what they're saying is going to Hillary is actually going over to Stein. I don't think Hillary's really honestly absorbing anyone except just total vote blue sheeples.
Well, Hillary has taken a hit, in fact. Now, the most recent polling that I've seen was done a little, just like a day before Bernie Sanders endorsed her, but it was during the fallout of the email scandal, and she's quickly catching up to Trump as far as unfavorability. She's approaching like 60%, and so that's really, really bad. So it's getting to the point now where Trump and Hillary are almost like equally unliked, And so this I just saw a sponsored ad by Hillary Clinton on my newsfeed that basically said, add your name if you want to stop Trump. It wasn't anything about Hillary Clinton. It wasn't about her policies. It wasn't about anything that she wants to do. It was literally, hey, sign up to my campaign alert system if you want to stop Trump. Like, that, literally, that's what she's going to be running on at this point. And because she's got such a bad record on many, many things. And yeah, she's got a ton of experience. I don't know.
So it's possible they're both so unpopular within their own parties, in honesty, and people at large, the actual voting public that would come out to a poll, would not vote for either of them in such a great number that perhaps Congress and the Senate will finally enact their ability to choose the president and the VP executively.
I mean, you know, it's interesting because they do have that power. But again, do we want Congress to be anointing our candidates? Because they've got like a 10% favorability rating, approval rating. You know, so it's just I don't know what would be worse. But the other bright spot is that now Gary Johnson, who they are including him in a lot of the polling, he's up to like 13%. If he gets,
yeah, but he's pro TPP.
So. He is, well, according to what I saw today, I want to see some better sources on it. But yeah, I did see that article today that apparently he's come out in favor of the TPP. I just don't see it though. I don't see why he would do that, especially just
because he thinks China is the only actual economic like threat to the U.S. Because right now what we're doing is offshoring debt. And that manufacturing is going to come back if privatization takes over, which he's got a point. So we would just kick China in the balls on the way out and take all of our manufacturing back, and that would be real smart.
Yeah, and in the meantime, we would outsource environmental regulations to corporate tribunals. That'd be lovely.
And then the manufacturing would go to Thailand and to the other third world countries that are just as bad, if not worse, than China.
No, it would come here. Just be slave labor here, Nick.
Oh, there you go. That sounds really good. And then the robots can just do all the work, right?
Yeah, the only people that will actually have jobs are just people fixing robots to do the jobs.
Oh, man. Anyway, with Gary Johnson, he's 13 points. If he gets 2 more percentage points, he'll be included in the debates. So that would be pretty big. That'd be pretty interesting to see Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, and Gary Johnson. I think if that actually happened, it'd be pretty obvious that he's got the most honest principles of the group. By no means is Gary Johnson perfect or anything, but compared to Trump and Hillary, I mean, there's no competition there, and that could be very interesting to see how that played out. And then I want to see how the polls start showing the movement of Bernie Sanders supporters over to Jill Stein, because that's one big problem with Jill Stein is that they don't include her in the polling. So it's hard to gauge at where she's at. Last I checked, she was around 5%. If she got over 10, if she got to 15, she would be in the debates as well. That would be a huge game changer for American politics. It would be the first time that's happened since, I think, Perot, right? Did Perot get into the main debates?
Yeah, yeah, he did. And do you remember how... I don't know if you guys are not nearly as old as me, but I remember how many times they cut him off during the debates with commercials. And it would be hilarious if Stein and Johnson got in, because they would do the same shit. But with the internet, they really couldn't.
DB, I'm 50, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Damn, you're looking young.
No, but do you remember Perot was seriously going to win that election before he dropped out, and then when he came back, he lost all his voters. He was beating Clinton and Bush at one point.
Why the hell did he drop out?
I don't know.
He was threatened.
I guess
some amount of time elapsed where he had some kind of a non-disclosed, but it lapsed, and now he said, you know what, my life was threatened.
Really?
Yeah, like a decade later or something.
Threatened by who?
I don't know, man. Whoever. Just whoever didn't want him in. That's why I don't know how the hell Trump's where he's at right now.
Because Trump's a businessman, and he's just a puppet, and you know, he's a businessman, and what he did is he filled a demand. He's thinking supply and demand. He saw there's a business opportunity to take over the Republican Party by consolidating the racism and xenophobia there, because really, that's the core of the party. It's not religion anymore. It's just basically just, you know, white hatred. And he took that, and he's a businessman, and he made a business move.
Well, he's a product of the post 9/11 mentality in the United States, where it's like we're under siege, and even though the attack killed very little people, I mean a couple thousand people, it's still bad. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that it's let's just ignore it or forget about it. Thousands of people died on 9/11. You know what I mean? And that's a bad thing. But the full power of the American propaganda machine came into effect. That hadn't really been done since, like, I mean, I guess it was probably done during Vietnam and, you know, Korea and stuff. But, you know, it was really evident for World War II. But it was fired back up again after the Cold War ended, because they were looking for, you know, the military-industrial complex can only go so long without stoking up some kind of major conflict so they can make money. After the Cold War ended, they were just looking for someone to fight. And they beat all the boogeymen up, and then 9/11 happened, and then they had a whole new boogeyman. And instead of saying, okay, we got to go take out this one country, they said, we got to take out this entire ideology. And so they've been a lot of xenophobia being ingrained into us via the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, the media. Every facet of the propaganda machine in the United States has been gearing up for demonizing brown people, basically. And so Trump is a product of that, and he's come along, and he's just basically saying what the propaganda has been trying to get us to think, right? And so Trump, he did like a pump fake in 2012 when he pretended like he was going to run for president, and his entire pre-presidential thing was about like challenging Obama's birth certificate and stuff, and he was like wildly popular for it. I mean, it's not any kind of policy, it's not a smart move, it's not anything that's going to help the country, but he literally just challenged Obama's birth certificate because there's a bunch of people that think Obama's a Muslim out there or not a U.S. citizen, which, you know, who knows, but that's beside the fact. That isn't going to, you know, that doesn't change his policies or anything like that. But Trump ran or started to run in 2012. He put a bunch of polling out, and I think he took stock of what the people were thinking, what they were feeling, and he came back this year and he just started saying what everybody was already thinking. And there's a reason they're thinking that way, and it's because of all this post 9/11 propaganda and stuff. And so, you know, Trump's able to say that stuff, and as much as it would seem like political suicide to a Democrat, you know, he's able to get away with it because just the sheer amount of people that actually believe the shit that he's saying. It would sink anybody else, but because so many people believe what he's saying, it doesn't sink him. You know, in fact, it makes him stronger when he says something like ban Muslims, or, you know, we need to start racially profiling people again. Like, he says that kind of shit, and his core base of supporters actually gets stronger, and they're like, yeah, he says what we believe in and stuff like that. Even though it's purely emotional appeal, it's working in 2016 because this Islamophobia, this post 9/11 propaganda, it's really come to a boiling point. And on the other hand, that's exactly why Hillary Clinton gets a pass on all the shit that she's done, whether it's her vote for the Iraq war, whether it's overthrowing Gaddafi, whether it's the email showing that she wanted to topple the Syrian government to help out Israel. I mean, she gets a pass on all that stuff because Democrats, just as much as Republicans, are covertly Islamophobic. They're covertly xenophobic, but they pretend because they're guilty. They have guilt about it, so they pretend that they're not. But at the same time, you can tell that they are because they all just give Hillary Clinton a pass on it. Like, oh, well, you know, better than Trump, you know. And so it's unfortunately an ideology that is permeating throughout the political class and the voting class. Now, fortunately, most of my friends who aren't involved in politics and aren't, you know, hardcore political activists that weren't out there caucusing for Bernie Sanders or out there passing out flyers for Donald Trump, they're not Islamophobic. They don't think Mexicans are a problem. They're not racist. But it's these people who are highly engaged. And in fact, there was a Pew Research study that came out a week or two ago. We covered it on the anti-media. I think Kerry wrote an article on it. It was about how the most politically active, as in like voting people, are actually people who are just more concerned about how bad the other party is. They're not even like proud of their own party or think that their party has good ideas. They just think they're going to vote Trump because the Democrats are awful, or they're going to vote for Hillary because Trump is awful. Like, those are the those people are literally the most motivated to vote. And that kind of also explains part of the problem here. People that are voting aren't level-headed. They're not, like, critically thinking. They're not analyzing the situation. They're not analyzing policies. They're literally voting because the other party makes them feel scared. You know, and this is just insane that the country is run this way. And it also, to me, it shows that how there's major failures in this quote-unquote democracy, because even if everything was a pure democracy here, I mean, you still got the only people voting, for the most part, are these just really scared people that are only voting against the other party. They're not even voting for something that they're proud of, that they care about, that they think is good.
It's manufactured consent. I mean, it's you know, the way Chomsky described it, which is keeping the discourse within an acceptable spectrum, and that's what they do. But, you know, I want you guys to think about this, and I'm curious as your opinion on it, is here's a kind of tantalizing prospect to Trump being president. Not that I want him to be president, obviously. I don't want either of them to be president. But Hillary is so smart. I mean, sinister smart, but she's scripted, and she's not gonna slip up and say something that would reveal anything about what's going on behind the scenes. Trump could. So you get 4 years of Trump, or I mean, God forbid, 8 years of Trump. Imagine how many times he's gonna slip up and say something, and we're just gonna be like, "What the F?" And it's gonna be, I mean, he could seriously just straight up, like, you know, say who killed Kennedy. I mean, we don't know what the hell he's going to do. But I mean, we've already seen how easily he can slip up and because he doesn't know what he's talking about most of the time. I mean, how easily could he just slip up and say something about, you know, like the shadow government or like, you know, Bilderberg or like, it could happen.
That's a good point, man. And, you know, Trump, he's sloppy, he's reactionary. If he's prodded, he'll say something back. And you're right. It could work for some juicy revelations. Clinton, on the other hand, I mean, if you look at the email scandal and the way she's handled that, if you look at the underlying issue as far as why was she setting up that private email server, from what I can tell, it's to avoid transparency. It's to keep stuff secret. It's so that the public wouldn't have a record of all the stuff that she was doing. And once, you know, as these emails come out, you start to see why. It's like, okay, she's talking about, you know, emails about Gaddafi and how, you know, France needs their oil and their gold and how we're going to overthrow Syrian government to help Israel and how we're going to overthrow the government of Honduras. You know, like, there's a reason why Hillary Clinton was trying to avoid transparency. So having her in the White House, it would probably, you know, Obama said he was going to be the most transparent presidency ever. That was a major failure. I mean, in fact, he's been one of the most secretive, one of the most harsh on whistleblowers and things like that. Hillary Clinton would probably be a lot worse because she's already shown a tendency of being secretive, trying to avoid transparency, trying to avoid FOIA. You know, and so with Clinton, it would be just a quiet, calculating, vicious foreign policy, neoliberal economics, you know, more and more of the same old NAFTA, TPP, all that crap would pass. With Trump, it's more of a wild card, even though as much as I can't stand Trump, I think he's awful. I think he's a fearmonger. I think he's a hate monger. But Trump didn't create this ideology that is permeating within the ranks of the new Republican Party. Trump is only tapping into that ideology that was created over decades since 9/11 by the media and by the political parties themselves, you know. And so honestly, I appreciate the Republicans more because they're more honest and upfront about their hatred and about, like, their xenophobia and stuff. And Obama sits there and he sheds tears every once in a while when there's shootings and stuff, but he indiscriminately bombs people overseas. And then he says, "Oh, well, we can't call it, you know, we can't call it radical Islam, but let's go ahead and just blow up a bunch of Muslim countries and stuff, and just, you know, no one's going to care about it because you guys are all programmed into thinking that Muslims are subhuman and that their lives aren't technically as valuable as anyone else's." You know, and so the Democrats are more sly. They're more, they trick you into believing that they give a shit about the average guy. They give a shit about immigrants. They give a shit about refugees when they don't. I mean, it's Obama and his policies and Clinton's policies in Syria that created the refugees to begin with. Like, if you cared about refugees, you would help try not to create refugees, because being a refugee is probably the worst situation known to mankind. Being a refugee means that your house, your family is either in the threat of being killed. Some of them have probably already been killed. Your homes have been blown up. Your country is being torn apart. That's why you're a refugee. Being a refugee is probably the worst status in the world. And the Democrats under Obama have created more refugees. And don't get me wrong, Bush helped lay the groundwork for this refugee crisis, but Obama's policies have made it worse. The Democrats don't give a shit about refugees. They're the ones creating the refugees. They just pretend, oh yeah, we'll be nice to them when they come over here and stuff. You know, but we still got to demonize Muslims because we still want to bomb their countries and we don't want no one giving a shit about them. Because if we were bombing France right now, I think people would be a little bit more like, what the hell? Why are we bombing France? This is crazy. We shouldn't be bombing France. But France is not Muslim. You know, France is white. We've demonized Muslims to make them to where they're almost not human anymore. You know, and that show, and it comes out in the Republican Party, the Trump supporters, where they think immigrants and refugees are the hugest threat to the world when they are nowhere even near a threat. In fact, they're something. Looking at it from an economic standpoint, it's good to have refugees. It's good to have immigrants. Now, looking at it from a foreign policy standpoint, it's not good because we're destroying people's countries in Iraq and Syria.
It's
Libya.
It's like we use it for a battlefield, Nick. Do you ever realize, like, it's Oceania versus Eurasia, and where we meet in the middle is where we fight now? Because nobody wants to bomb anyone's, like, actual countries, so we just fight it out right there.
Exactly, exactly. And we pretend that we're arming pro-democratic forces in Syria, and Syria and Russia pretends like they're fighting against terrorists. And, you know, I think each of those are partially true and they're mostly false, because we are arming factions in Syria, and some of them actually do want democracy. I think they're the minority of the groups that are fighting, because I think ISIS is the biggest force against Assad out there, and they're definitely not democratic. And on the other hand, Russia is arming the Assad regime, which is, you know, been known for human rights violations and, you know, horrible things on its own. And they say they're bombing terrorists. They're also bombing, you know, Kurdish groups. They're bombing pro-democratic groups. They're also bombing ISIS. You know, and you're right, dude. It's just like Orwell predicted. It's a big-time proxy war between the major powers, and we're destroying other people's countries because we're too afraid to bomb each other. We don't have the balls or the accountability to bomb each other. We instead bomb these other countries and pretend that we're doing something that we're not.
And it's so further complicated with Iran, which is why they want so desperately to get rid of Iran, because Iran, with that strait right there and with their military power, they can just shut the world's oil supply down and really mess up the war machine for not only us, but, I mean, China essentially gets a lot of their stuff right through that pass too. So, yeah, man, it's crazy stuff right now that's going on. They're trying to just position assets around and grab these last resources before, I guess, they decide who's going to run it all. But I think it's going to stay bipolar, at least for our lifetimes, which is just even crazier because they're going to keep these proxies going.
And it's so horrible because the majority of these people in the Middle East are innocent people. And, you know, the next generations are going to be worse off and worse off. There's going to be more and more people that are in there looking for revenge. I mean, our foreign policy right now is literally a manufacturing hub of terrorism. Like, what we're doing in Iraq and Syria right now is creating enemies for generations to come. I mean, it's guaranteeing us war forever, you know, and maybe that's what they want to do. I don't think we
can't exist without it, though. We're like a corporation and we sell stock in, like, misery and war. And, like, if we don't have that, we would break up. Like, people would never stay together. Like, the South, North, East Coast, West Coast are all different countries. And the only thing that keeps us glued together are these massive conflicts.
That's right, man. And I think there's a reason why they recruit all these guys from the South. Have you noticed there's, like, a outsized chunk of the military that are, like, dudes from the South, like a bunch
of
white dudes from the
South? They're
still
punishing them. They're still punishing them.
I think there's a reason why they do so much heavy recruiting in the South for the military. It's to keep a lot of these fighting age dudes tied up in the military so they can't form their own kind of rebel alliance like the old days. I mean, I think you're right, DB. I think the cultural split is so drastic. I mean, the United States should not be one country. It's just too big. There's too many people.
I mean, even Hawaii is, in our lifetimes, we're going to see a vote for them to become independent. They'll just lease out Pearl Harbor to the military. But my sister lives there. She says it's growing and growing. The new generation coming up saying, like, hey, I don't want to pay taxes for war. Like, this is the new generation. They don't want to pay the federal taxes that go to war. And they don't want to be hit if we ever went to war with China. They would get hit. And they know that. They're not stupid.
Yeah, there's a huge growing movement in several places. I mean, there's many secessionist movements going on. There's one in California. What's it called? It's named after one of the Jefferson, California. You've heard of that? It's like where Northern California and Southern Oregon wants to split apart and become its own state. The Texas secessionist movement is stronger than ever. The Hawaii secessionist movement, I mean, the people in Hawaii are laid back, peace-loving people that want to be left alone and smoke their bud and have a good life and enjoy the weather. What's her name? Gabbard, I think, the congresswoman from Hawaii?
Tulsi
Gabbard, yeah. Amazing, amazing Democratic congresswoman. She has been like the singular voice in Congress against what's going on in Syria and all of our proxy wars over there and stuff. Anybody wanting to look for someone within government that's actually decent, I mean, in the Democratic Party, I can name her.
Because I mean, she served. And that's what we need, man. I mean, all these dudes coming back with PTSD, like, they need to have a voice in government so that wars stop, so that people see the true human cost. I mean, she was even saying, like, she was lucky she wasn't on the front lines, and she knew people that came back and they were ghosts of themselves, they were shells. And that's just a waste, man. We need these people to be involved when they get back.
Very true, man. Very, very true. So the last thing I wanted to bring up on the RNC, and I got a quote here from one of the founding fathers who these guys love to take out of context or only quote or look up to when they fit their narratives. Oh, God, where'd it go now? Now I lost it. Shit. Hold on. Let me find it again. Okay. Those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. This was by Benjamin Franklin from 1755, apparently. Anyway, I was watching that video of this comedian that was trolling Alex Jones today. I didn't catch the whole thing because the damn website I was watching it on was just loading up too slow, and I just lost patience and closed it. Anyway, I was watching one of the videos, and one of the guys was wearing a Make America Great Again, obvious Trump supporter. And one of the guys was like arguing with him, and he's like, what do you want, man? He's like, I want to make America safe again. And that was like the, I don't know if you guys saw that video that Trump put out a week or two ago. It was like kind of after the Dallas police shooting. And Trump put out a video, and instead of saying make America great again, he changed his narrative, his rhetoric to make America safe again. And as Jake kind of mentioned, Trump is going to run on a law and order platform. Trump is going to be talking about how we need to keep everybody safe, how we need to, you know, use xenophobia and profiling to protect us, how we need to ban Muslims from entering the country, how we need to ban people from crossing over the Mexican border because we don't know if they're rapists or they're criminals and all that kind of stuff. This is the rhetoric that's going to be coming out. And as the blowback starts to materialize here from all the police brutality and stuff, I mean, there was just another cop, a couple more cops, three, I think, gunned down in Baton Rouge by another guy, by a black dude. This is blowback, right? We talk about blowback all the time. If the cops are going to be killing people, and another cop just got exonerated today in Baltimore,
yeah,
on the Freddie Gray thing. And so the more we see this kind of police brutality, and not only police brutality, but where there's no justice being served, the cops get away with it. You know, Tamir Rice just came out a couple weeks ago where the cops weren't going to be charged on that. Now Freddie Gray, the cops aren't the highest ranking cop isn't going to be charged for that.
And you know what they're going to do, man? Because I'm already seeing it up here in the Twin Cities. Is they're saying it's so dangerous for us, we're going to now have to go to a squad car. So now they're saying we're going to have to double the – this is ridiculous. They're saying we're going to have to double the police force. So now they're going to have a new tax on the next election cycle, like a 0.25% tax bracket or tax to hire double the police officers. So now they're going to increase that because they're all now two to a car because it's too dangerous for them. I mean, this is where it goes, man. It's a slippery slope that never, ever, ever ends once this starts.
Yeah, and the stars are aligning for Donald Trump. And this, and I'll say this, and I've said this before, Donald Trump is not the establishment guy. He's not the guy that they wanted to run. He's not the guy they wanted to win. I think that guy, and I'll stick to this because I've been saying this from the beginning, the guy that the Republican establishment, the defense establishment, that all these assholes wanted to win was Marco Rubio, in my opinion. And if Rubio couldn't have it, then it was going to be Hillary Clinton. And so, I mean, I see the establishment shifting and majorly supporting Hillary Clinton. I mean, they have been. Ever since it became clear that Trump was possibly going to win, it shifted over to Hillary Clinton. Now she's Teflon when it comes to the media. I mean, the mainstream media, when it came out that she wasn't going to be indicted on the email server or whatever, I mean, the mainstream media, total white glove treatment, hands off, didn't even give her any shit. Outside of a couple op-eds. I mean, the independent media really went after her, and I wish that we could still go after her, but now there's other stuff trending in the news, so we can't. I mean, obviously we still do, but it's just, you know, you guys know what I'm saying. Trump is not the establishment guy, and all of the forces that are at play with the media, with the political power, the money interests, and all that stuff, it's all going to go to Hillary Clinton, but that, none of that's going to matter because the stars are aligning for Donald Trump, and I don't mean this in a good way, but all of the blowback, whether it's from police brutality and in the form of people shooting the cops, because this stuff is going to become regular. It's going to be happening like it was during Prohibition years. From that to all the blowback from the foreign policy, all these refugees coming to the U.S., and then not only that, the terrorists that are pissed off at all the you know, foreign entanglement that we've gotten ourselves into. There's going to be homegrown terror attacks. There's going to be coordinated terror attacks. There's going to be ISIS terror attacks all over the world. And there's probably going to be several more in the United States before November. And all of this stuff plays right into the hands of Donald Trump. And I don't care about the vote rigging. I don't care about the media rigging, the super PACs, the money. None of that stuff is going to stand up to Donald Trump's rhetoric. And he could pull this thing off and he could win. But he's going to win on a law and order type of heavy-handed type of candidacy, which is the type of stuff you saw George Bush start doing after 9/11. Keep in mind, Bush ran on a very humble foreign policy platform. He ran on a hands-off domestic platform, but he changed his tune after 9/11. Trump is running on the very worst stuff that Bush did after 9/11. Trump is already running on that. Think about how worse it will get once he gets into office.
And he's doing it on a heavily pro-Second Amendment platform, while at the same time pushing all the xenophobia. So we're going to have heavily armed cops, people with all the firearms they could ever buy, and they're going to ramp it up, and a bunch of immigrants are going to be in here, and they're going to be sitting ducks. They're going to be the new easy target.
Yeah, dude. Go ahead, Jake.
Yeah. It's hard not to see this really escalating into a, I don't want to say civil war because that's pretty extreme, but I mean, yeah, like DB said, there's no end to this because it's a downward spiral now because you know, as the cops start getting killed, you know, just like, you know, in Justin King's article, what happens when cops start getting killed, you know, they're gonna get more intense, and then the blowback against the community, they'll get more intense, and it's just this symbiotic dance of fear that's just going to keep continuing. And yeah, if you have someone like Trump who's simultaneously pro-cop and pro-Second Amendment, you just end up getting all these, you know, it's just setting it up for just violence in the streets like nothing we've ever seen before. And yeah. That just, you know, that creates a new cycle in which the government comes in and asserts their authority, and people want that because they're scared, and there's no end to this. I don't see any way out of this. Go ahead.
I just wanted to interject something quick about how they said World War II kind of ramped up, because World War I was absolutely horrible. You're talking about probably something like 5% of the world's population dying, and a lot of it was after the war because of unsanitary conditions on battlefields, the spread of the Spanish flu, and vice versa, all kinds of other shit. But let's just put it this way. What they said was how the war started was really simple. They said once enough innocent people die and enough people lose enough people they care about, they don't care about dying themselves, and then they start killing the people that killed those people. And that's how war starts. Once enough of your friends and family are killed, you don't care about your own death anymore, and you go kill those people. And that's war. And it doesn't end until enough people are dead that people are like, oh, shit, we got to stop this.
Great point, man. There was a sheriff, one of the head sheriffs, I believe it was in Wisconsin. He penned an op-ed today. Where would I read it? It was in The Hill magazine, I believe, which is a pretty reputable inside the Beltway news source. They're getting all the Guccifer 2.0 leaks and all that stuff. This sheriff basically said this is war. There's a war going on in the streets, and it's us versus them. And, you know, as the Justin King article, what happens after cops start getting shot, I recommend everybody that's listening go on theantimedia.org and read that article. Because as Jake said, man, we're heading into a very dark chapter of American history here where the cops are now feeling like they're on the front lines of a war in the United States.
They've always been at war with us, Nick, but they've never been armed and armored like now. And they kind of did it under our nose, at least the people that are asleep, which is most Americans. They did it under the guise of national security, DHS, and preventing terrorists and all that kind of stuff. And all they were doing was arming up for us, man. When the economy finally does collapse and all of our guns are going to be out in the streets, it's going to be a free-for-all, and that's what they're getting ready for.
Yeah, man, and, you know, these cops, you know, I see a lot of chatter, a lot of memes about, you know, they shouldn't follow the orders and stuff, and they should, you know, if there were good cops, they would arrest the bad cops. You got to understand, though, is that there's plenty of research out there on psychology. I mean, Bernays, look him up and do some research on this hierarchy, psychology, and stuff like that. I mean, these cops are going to do what the hell they are told.
They just threaten their families.
They're going to do what they're told. There may be like 15 or 20% of them that may disobey orders when it comes down to the pinch and it comes down to it. And they may say, they may lay down their arms and say, I'm not going to, you know, shoot people in the neighborhood anymore. But the majority of them will, because it comes down to psychology and, you know, groupthink, the hive mind, and a bunch of different things at play here. The government has been performing and you know, refining this process of herd mentality and group psychology for a long time, and that's how they get us into these wars. That's how they got us into Iraq. Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11, and the 28 pages reconfirms that. We all knew it, but Iraq had nothing to fucking do with 9/11. But they used the group psychology, they used all these tactics from Bernays and all this stuff, and they said, okay, let's go bomb Iraq for no apparent reason. Okay, everyone was cool with it for the most part. I mean, yeah, there were protesters out there. It was never more than 10% of the people. I mean, there was like a million people out on the streets, but that's nowhere near 10%. That's like 0.3% or something. You know, the cops are going to follow their orders, and as the cops become targeted, they get shot, they're going to respond back with more militarization, more heavy-handedness, more brutality. That's going to trigger more people to be like angry at the cops and shoot back at the cops. I mean, we're heading to a dark fucking place in American history, man.
Well, Nick, it's going to add, what's going to happen when they reach a point where they're in the Humvees and they have, you know, machine guns mounted on the roofs and shit because they're in occupation land, and they get into an actual firefight with stuff military uses, and they start indiscriminately killing people as collateral damage for using high-powered, basically, artillery within the cities. This is where it's gearing up to, man. I mean, some of the weapons they're firing now are full-on. They are full military assault rifles. I'm talking like they'll empty their clip pretty much instantly, and all those bullets go somewhere, man. They don't just stop. They keep traveling. So what's going to happen when a bunch of just totally innocent people that are in the vicinities of these completely over-militarized police start dying? Then what happens when regular, ordinary people start going insane? That's when it happens.
Exactly, man.
Asymmetric warfare is what happens, and that's what it's going to be.
And that's, you know, and this is outlined back to that article, what happens next after cops start getting shot. It's all part of this like cycle of insurgency, you know, and right now, because of the heavy-handedness of the U.S. government, there's an insurgent movement growing in the United States. You could look at it from the aspect of the anarchist movements, the anti-government movements, the militia movements, the Black Lives Matter movement, the Black Liberation groups, the white nationalists. There's several different insurgent groups in the United States right now. But so far, there's only been, I don't want to call them isolated incidents, but incidents that aren't that big, where it's like one guy gets killed by a cop, two guys get killed by a cop, three cops get shot, four cops get shot, you know, another guy gets killed by a cop. But DB, like you were saying, man, as these guys start overreacting, and this is all part of this cycle, what happens when the cops gun down 10 people? Because they saw a group of guys and somebody flashed a gun, or they thought they saw a gun, and then they accidentally shoot down 10 people. That's when something big is going to happen, and these are the kind of events that trigger something on a much larger scale. And looking back through history, I mean, it's easy to look at like the Boston Massacre, for instance, where the British killed like only five people in 1770, and that event helped lead to like other events that helped lead to the American Revolution. You know what I'm saying? So this is like a cycle. I mean, it was just four cops killed in Dallas, three cops killed in Baton Rouge. I mean, when is it going to be an actual police station getting bombed? I mean, I'm not saying that I'm hoping it happens. I'm just saying I'm expecting that to happen soon, because these cops aren't being held accountable for their actions.
I was just about to say, what happens when a police station gets bombed? And they've been preparing to refer to us as domestic terrorists for a while. They've been planning for this, like EB said. I mean, this has been in the works. It's been written into the language of some of these bills. They've been preparing for, you know, war at home. And, yeah.
They have to declare martial law prior to the economy collapsing. If they do not, then we will band with the police and the military and take them out. That's all it is.
Yeah, and it comes back to group psychology. I mean, if you look at this recent coup attempt, and there's plenty of theories. I mean, I've seen, first of all, from the EU, it was floated that Erdogan had a pre-planned list of dissidents that he wanted to round up, and he was just waiting for an excuse to happen. So the coup on that, from looking at it from that aspect, pretty convenient. Looking at it from the other accusation, which comes from the Turkish government, is that the U.S. is by default responsible for this coup, because they're blaming it on this guy that is getting refuge in the United States, Gulen. Either way, if you look at the coup, man, and you see the psychology that's involved in a coup, well, obviously those military guys didn't have it planned out very well, because they weren't shooting anybody down in the streets. I mean, a handful of people got killed, but these guys were trying to take over, you know, monuments and news stations and government buildings, and they weren't shooting anybody. They were just trying to take it over peacefully, and they weren't using the heavy hand that they, you know, that the military has. So all of that stuff is something to keep an eye on as we move into this state of insurgency here in the United States, and the psychology involved in getting the military to join your cause. The military is only going to join with the people if they feel like they could win. If they think that it's a coin toss, or if they think that it's likely they're going to lose, the military is going to gun people down, dude, and the cops are going to do the same. But if they think that they're going to win, then they'll join the cause. That's one thing that we have to keep in mind. So, I mean, I just...
Well, I guess that's what the UN's for.
There you go. Call in the UN. Other newsworthy stuff on the antimedia.org tonight. Check out the story on the why we may never know how many civilians have died in the Iraq war. Estimates in our article say over 1 million since 2003. 1 million dead Iraqis since 2003, thanks to the U.S. and the U.K., tell me how many terrorists that is going to create. A lot. I mean, all of our grandparents are going to, our grandchildren are going to be dealing with these people that we fucked up over there. Fox News CEO is on the way out because he's being accused of sexual harassment. That's interesting. Bunch of other stories. We had a bunch of original stuff published today on the Anti-Media. Go check it out. Thank you all for tuning in. 5 days a week, Anti-Media Radio. Peace.
I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.